Forever GM never stops thinking about how to make games better. If you are one, want to be one, or would like to find one, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Forever GMs podcast, a roundtable where two professional game masters dig into the craft of running games for a living alongside other professionals in the RPG industry. I'm Doc.
And I'm Liv. And today we have two fantastic guests. Today we have Angela, or Ange Murray, author and head gnome at Gnome Stew, award-winning RPG blog, host of the Gnome Cast, and host of THACO with Advantage. We also have Beau Sheldon, tabletop role-playing game designer, writer, and leadership educator, and if you're familiar with today's topic, author of the Script Change RPG Toolbox. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, doing great. Again, it's the tantalization of spring in the air, but then it turns cold again, so...
I'm doing pretty okay. Weather here sucks in Pittsburgh, but hopefully, you know, I won't have to deal with that much longer. Good to see everyone, though.
Yeah, we've had like 70-30, back-forth, like a yo-yo, and can't be doing that anymore.
I really want to put away all my sweaters.
I put mine away. I'm done with jackets. No more jackets. I am a jacket, so I'm fine.
This is fine.
My daughter will like, you need a jacket. I'm like, no, I don't.
I will say, like, the best thing about testosterone is that I have body heat now.
Yeah.
Fantastic. It's the coolest thing in the world.
I have menopause, and I don't want the heat, so...
I have nothing.
I've got the testosterone-menopause combo breaker, so, like... I'll take it. It's fine.
This helps, right?
At least I have a beard now. I don't know.
I have so many questions as to whether beards actually have insulate heat, but let's jump over to our game spotlight before we get too off topic and don't talk about RPGs whatsoever today. So, Jesse, what's our game spotlight today?
Our game spotlight today is Thirsty Sword Lesbians. Thirsty Sword Lesbians is a game designed by April Kit Walsh. It blends swashbuckling adventure, melodrama, queer romance, and emotional storytelling. It is a game about feelings and relationships and identity and messy human connections. I love those things. I have not had the opportunity to play Thirsty Sword Lesbians yet. I have had a few people offer, and it has not manifested. But the thing that I liked a lot about this game is that it ties safety elements directly into the game design itself. It's built in with that philosophy, and it explicitly supports lines and veils and the X card and script change style tools. It supports open communication, checking in. This is part of the game itself. For me, one of the things that I've always kind of loved about it is that the philosophy of having safety as a tool that improves the game and makes the game itself move is something that I was fascinated by from the time that we started talking about safety. I say we, it was me, because I was brought to it a little late in the game, but I love the idea of something that gives people a real world check-in that allows for that. It demonstrates that emotional storytelling requires intentional safety structures, and you can explore those through the tools that are built into it. Has anybody played? I mean, I have to imagine. No? You've played, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, usually I've never played the game Spotlight.
I know.
But this one, I have played.
Yeah.
This is another one I've also gifted to people.
It's a good gift.
It's a really good gift.
This is one I probably would have played at Games on Demand, except it came out at a time when Games on Demand wasn't at all the conventions I was going to, and so I've kind of missed it, but it's been on my radar.
I've heard a ton about it. I've just never actually played it. We haven't been playing as often a lot, partially pandemic, basically echoing in that, and also just a lot of coordination plans with everyone being, you know, grown-ups now who have jobs and responsibilities. I'm sure, like many of the people who listen, that it's like the struggle is real to try and actually get a game going. I think that it sounds fantastic. I'm a big fan of integrated mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I always said whenever I was initially pushing Script Change is that I would love for people to take it and rename things and design them into their games to fit the type of game they're playing with even the script change tools themselves. That's why they're supposed to be more generic, is so that they can be customized and so you can have that. And I even did consultation for that for years. Mm-hmm. I designed it into people's games. I helped them rewrite it for that purpose, because if something is part of the language of the game, it will always be used more often, more reliably, and more successfully every time.
Mm-hmm.
But the purpose of safety mechanics is to have that meta level support that you can actually function with on the non-meta level.
Honestly, you're saying it. They're meant to be generic so that you can integrate them. And here I was thinking like, well, I'm a groundbreaker because I think they should be integrated. Like, no, that's built. Of course it is.
A lot of people don't do it. And like, there are benefits to having them sound separate. Like, I'll be totally real. The absolute meta ones, like whenever I use them, I typically use them without like adjusting them to my games unless it really makes sense. Because for me, it's helpful to make sure people know what I'm talking about and that it's clearly separate from the rest of the game, stuff like that. That can especially be helpful in early stages of getting to use them, because removing that like, oh, I'm saying a thing that interrupts the game stigma is a big deal. And then once you actually start getting comfortable with them, integrating them so you know what the phrases mean, even if they are said differently.
Mm-hmm.
So switching it from, you know, pause to hold fast.
Sure.
That's a switch you can easily make and integrates it immediately. And you can even use flowery language to describe in the game. But like, if you don't have the people understanding what pause means in the first place, sometimes that can be a little bit of a stumble upon into it to get any progress.
Liv, since you did play Thirsty Sword Lesbians, like how did it feel having them integrated in part of the game?
I think this is, so when I like GM, I am usually a fan of having them not integrated in kind of more meta.
Sure.
I actually felt like this was very organic,
mm-hmm.
which sometimes, I agree, Bo, like when I'm playing games, sometimes it can feel a little hard to bring them in. And I think later on in the discussion, we'll talk a little bit more about like kind of the awkwardness sometimes of safety tools. But this felt so organic to do, where like I didn't feel like I was pausing or even breaking character
mm-hmm.
when I was using some of these tools. And so that was really nice.
Yeah, I think it's about keeping the structure and the function of the tool in the meta, but keeping the language and the actions you do to use it as close to immersed as you can.
Awesome.
That's a challenge, but it can be really fantastic when it works.
I think Thirsty Sword Lesbians was a great intro into what we're talking about today, which is safety tools. And we've touched on it, obviously, in our game Spotlight. Bo, Ange, could you give like a quick overview? What is a safety tool for anyone who's new to them in the TTRPG space?
Safety tools are mechanics and things we can add to our games or are incorporated in our games, like we talked about with Thirsty Sword Lesbians, that allow us to make sure we have a safe place for our players to engage with the meat of the narrative that we're putting down on the table through our game. Because, you know, it's a game. We're here playing for, you know, either adventure or drama or horror or whatever it is, and we want our players to feel safe engaging with that to the fullest extent. And sometimes that requires being able to have a moment to say, hey, this is going in a direction that I'm not comfortable continuing with.
For me, basically all of the same stuff applies. I often describe safety tools as being basically a mechanic that is a functional tool. It is typically a meta tool or something that is in some ways functionally separated from the normal mechanics of your game, but hopefully able to give you a way to communicate and to adjust and like control the content of the games that you're playing to make sure that it's more accessible both like emotionally and functionally for everyone. Because like, for example, script change includes stuff about taking safety breaks and taking times to use like the restroom and make sure you eat and hydrate and stuff like that, because safety goes the whole way top to bottom. And we often neglect those things when we're having full day marathons of games. And sometimes it means that you go into the haunted house when you really don't want to. And sometimes it means you just need to have a snack. I like to think of safety tools as a holistic thing where you have something to basically grab onto. It's like a handrail. Or a ramp. You can ramp up to more exciting, more dangerous, scary things as you play, or you can grab onto something and hold on tight to help you get through it. It's an accessibility tool as much as it is, you know, something we use to communicate what we want out of the game.
I love both of those definitions. And you kind of touch on something I was going to talk about in our next topic or question is like, what do you consider? Because I play a lot of virtual games. Me and Jesse work for Young Dragon Slayers. And so one of the things I tell my players being every quarter is like, hey, if you need a bio break, if you need a snack, go to the bathroom, get water, stuff like that. Like that is, you know, do that whenever you feel like it. It didn't really register to me that that can also be a safety tool, like having that explicit norm or expectation in that space. So that physical need the body has.
I came up, and I think Ange could probably speak to this as well. I came up in the era where the idea, I think, the safety tools from a lot of people I played with years and years ago was kind of like, oh, well, you know, oh, you can't handle it. Or, you know, I've heard old gamers like me say like, oh, I got a thick skin. Like, well, you had to develop a thick skin because people are mean. Like,
exactly. But it gives like motorcyclist tattoo artist who's like, you gotta go through, get through it. And like,
you just gotta toughen up. Like, no, toughen up sucks.
Yeah.
Like, what did it...
I once had a conversation talking about how I started gaming in the 80s. And it was not necessarily a welcoming space for a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to really want to be here to get through a lot of that. And a lot of that is similar to some of the reasons why we have safety tools today.
Yeah, I tell a lot of people, like, it may not be something that you would think is useful right now. And it may not always be useful all the time for everyone. But if it's there and you're having a hard day, and maybe it's not even that it's going to like trigger you or like stress you out, but you just really don't want to deal with somebody like doing their tangent about this specific character in the game, and you're just bored and stressed, maybe that's the time you're going to use it. You're just going to be like, hey, can we just fast forward through this description? Because like, I don't really care about Hornby like right now. I would like to get to the next part of the game, and it's like stressing me out to have to wait. There are different purposes for them. Everything from, you know, actual accessible needs for like people with mental health or physical health needs, to people who just like, maybe they just don't want something super silly that day.
Mm.
We've actually had them used whenever people are like going way too far into this like the gonzo range while we were in the midst of a more serious scene. Like, I've had my partners have brought them up and been like, hey, like, can we like fast forward and like maybe like rewind that happened and just like keep going in the story, because everyone went gonzo in the middle of a scene and it bummed them out because they were excited about the story that was serious.
Yeah.
And so it's basically like about meeting needs that maybe you don't know how to communicate, or that it's harder to communicate in length than it is to just say, let's just use a tool. I don't like that. Let's move on.
Yeah.
I can think about a lot of times in, even as a player or as a GM, where looking back, it would have been really nice to have a safety tool or to have something like that. But I think we are still, as like a culture of TTRPGs, kind of working our way through some of those like older norms of like toughen through it and things like that. And so I like that idea, Bo, where you might not need it every single session. You might not need it right now. But like thinking about those things and incorporating them into your game, so like when the need arises, you have something and you're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very big like preparation.
Yeah.
As a GM, and making sure that we're always ready for something.
Yeah.
Like if you think about it, when somebody designs a building, and like my big thing is like, I'm disabled. I've had to deal with the nature of like lack of accessibility in a lot of spaces as I've become more disabled over the years. Mm-hmm. And being like, they design a building and they don't put in ramps because, well, you know, not that many people, you know, need them. But then there are people who do. So they get forced to put them in. And then all the people who use the ramp are like, well, that was a little bit easier than the stairs. Sometimes it's just nice to have a like handrail or a ramp or something easy to help you get through stuff, even if it's just because you're tired that day.
The argument that came up when I was at a company, I almost said the name of the company. I don't know why I would do that on a recording.
This is the one that is not an orange.
No, definitely not that. No, it was a very different company, but they didn't have accessibility stuff. And one of the things that kept coming up is like people would get injured and like wouldn't be able to come to work because they didn't have accessibility stuff. And it's like, you're not just doing it for like people that are disabled. You're doing this for everyone potentially. Listen, everyone's just a single bouncy ball sitting on the floor away from being disabled for a little while.
Right.
like don't be ridiculous.
Yeah. And I also like safety tools like whenever I can, I'm talking about like making a safe place for people, like as you asked, Liv, like one of the things I look for is not just, is this safe in all the ways we think about safety? Like it's not just the equivalent of like anti-slip floors and handrails on the walls. Does it actually feel safe to engage? Mm-hmm. So like, do you feel welcomed? Do you feel comfortable with the ability to speak up when you feel like something is wrong? Mm. Or are you just going to like feel like if something happens that you don't like, even if it's not a serious thing, but something you just don't like, and are you just going to be sitting there because you're too nervous to bring it up because there's no way to facilitate communication? There's no way for you to overcome the differences between you and the people around you because maybe you just don't know how to do it. Because like a lot of us are neurodivergent in the communities of gamers. And we also have a lot of people who have been socially conditioned to not raise up problems and address them. Mm-hmm. And that means that like maybe you're just not having fun.
Yeah,
that's it. Like, that's the whole thing. You're just not having fun in a scenario for whatever reason, but it could be fixed if maybe like we skipped a scene or maybe we just didn't have that content that we brought up, you know, that you didn't really like.
Yeah.
Or maybe take a break and you feel better after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that part of that is like trying to make it possible for people to do things in a way that's approachable for them. And sometimes that's the safest thing is having the time and space and the tools to deal with whatever happens, regardless of what it is.
I'm really glad you brought up tools because our next question is, what are some systems and safety tools that you would suggest every GM use? Kind of like, what's the baseline that everybody that runs games should probably have access to, or at least look over and address?
I'm going to say first thing out of the gate, you need a session zero.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Session zero may not be a formal safety tool in the grand scheme of things, but it is the place where you can get a feel for what your players are going to be comfortable engaging with and what they want out of the game going forward. It's a place you can put in certain safety tools like lines and veils and mm-hmm. other things like that. But it is the point at which you and your players come to an agreement about what the game is going to be going forward.
Very agreed.
I like that. I think sometimes I share things even like deciding the genre of the game, mm-hmm. like the norms and expectations of the table, how long you play for. Again, are things that, like as Bo was mentioning, things that you might not necessarily think to be safety tools, but at least set those expectations for what is going to be fun and like enjoyable for the table. And so session zero, we've talked about so many times on this podcast, I feel like always have a session zero.
Well, like Bo was saying before, you know, people could use a safety tool to say like, hey, this game is going off tone, mm-hmm. you know, like you're going gonzo and we're trying to have a serious scene. That's the type of thing you can establish what the tone of the campaign or game is going to be in session zero. I avoid slapstick games because I don't enjoy them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can set that up in session zero to say, this is what I am going for in my game. I am looking for you to be big damn heroes. I want there to be humor, but I also want there to be actual stakes, mm-hmm. you know, and that can basically set things up so that going forward in the game, everyone is on the same page mm-hmm. for where you are going. It's not an active safety tool that you use in the middle of a session, mm-hmm. but it is very important so you can set things off on the right step for your game going forward.
Yes, and it's also the place where you set up a lot of safety tools like mm-hmm. lines and veils, swicks, picks, and icks, and stuff like that, that you ask those questions at the beginning of the planning process, not, you know, halfway through campaign, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it is a good place to have those conversations in part because I have had experiences where somebody really wanted to play a game, they talked to everybody else about it, and then they finally get together with game group and they do the session zero and they're like, hey, we want to play this game and it has like these content elements in it. And one of their, you know, star players or whatever, somebody really wanted to be a part of it, their response is like, I hate that stuff. Like, I would not have any fun with this. Like, can we maybe consider something else? So you got to go back to the drawing board.
Mm-hmm.
So having those conversations early and even pre-session zero in persons, like sharing information with each other, like communication is probably one of the biggest tools I would say to use. Talk to each other about things. If you aren't willing to bring up things that might cause a conflict or be disagreed with, then maybe you need to take a step back and reassess if this is a place you're actually going to feel safe and comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because what happens when there's something you really care about?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a thing that's worth discussing. And it, a lot of the time it is a solvable problem. And I think the session zeros are a good way to do that, is to like actually be like, well, how can we find a genre that we all like that has all of these elements? Let's make a list of things that we like and see what genres fit them. What games would be able to do that? It makes it a lot more possible to find solutions if you actually communicate.
Right.
I think Stars and Wishes along that same line is one I think that people don't think of as a safety tool, but that's your aftercare. Like, it's the what worked and what didn't. And
yeah,
I mean, even knowing what worked is as much of a safety tool, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like, I think that stuff like Roses, Thorns and Buds, Stars and Wishes, and like in Script Change, I have like the highlight reels and the rap meetings and bloopers and outtakes all have different ways of approaching those like different subjects to debrief. But also I have like the instant replay that you do like immediately after a scene even. And I think that one of the best tools that you can have is some sort of safety tool or structured behavior that allows you to reflect on the things that you just did, either in the scene or in the session, like take breaks sometimes and actually like step back after a really intense play scene or after something that's really energetic even. Like if you just like take down an entire dragon and you're like blowing up the whole dungeon, and then you move into the next scene, sometimes it loses like the, you don't get to carry on that cool weight. You don't get to enjoy that time and like relish in it.
Live in the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think debriefing tools are actually one of the most important things that we do not do enough of in any form of gaming. And that actually was what I was going to say right after you, like, I was like, I literally want to talk about debriefing tools because I think that they're so underrated and they can be approached in so many different ways. Like you can do everything from just a follow-up email or like a text. That's a debrief. That's a check-in. It's something. Any kind of way that you reconnect with each other to refresh yourselves about what happened in the past events and make sure it's what you want to continue experiencing going forward and see how you can fix it if it's not. Like that's the value of those kinds of debriefs. And you also can sometimes catch stuff before it gets bad, which is I think one of the best parts because like sometimes somebody's just like, they'll feel a little off after a session, but they don't want to say anything. But if there's a debrief that everybody participates in, you know, and you have the opportunity to participate in maybe different ways. Say, hey, we'll talk now, but if you still feel something afterwards, email me.
Yeah.
That is like so valuable because the nervous person who maybe is new to the games or like hesitant will still have an outlet to maybe reach out. And that's important, I think.
Or even if it's not something that's like a major problem, if it's just a slight annoyance, a good player will generally be like, I'm going to tamp down on that and not interrupt the rest of the game for everyone else. But having that conversation after the game with the GM can explain, yeah, I was a little annoyed at this, you know, either some other player's behavior or something that was happening in game or something they wanted to have happen that got short-circuited because of other stuff that was happening in the game. Ultimately, I think a lot of this boils down to it's empathy.
Yeah.
It's empathy from the GM towards your players to make sure everyone at the table is having a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's tough to say having a good time in a game like Aliens where you're expecting everyone to die horribly. But at the same time, we are all here to have fun playing the game, engaging with the mechanics and telling these stories.
Mm-hmm.
You as the GM having empathy for the players at your table to make sure everyone is having a good time is, I think, one of the first steps to being able to make these things work.
Yeah. And like, I think that one of the most underrated aspects of that kind of communication, both at the beginning and the end, is like while you're talking about these things and like seeing what people liked, what they didn't like, what they might not like, everyone gets to, even if you don't know each other well, have the opportunity to read people's expressions or get their voice over the recording or how hesitantly they respond to say yes in the text messages or whatever and in the chat and be like, okay, whenever I brought this up, they seemed kind of hesitant. Over time, playing with people, whenever you have these kinds of communication, these debriefs and these prep sessions, you get to the point where you'll be in the middle of a scene and somebody was about to suggest something that's probably pretty like over the top or maybe like would hit a button for you potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, for example, then we're going to trap him under the ocean in his coffin for 1,000 years. And they get halfway past the word trap him into the ocean and they look at your face and they recognize the expression on your face whenever you just noped the heck out last time, right?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wait, we're going to trap him in a carriage. And just change subject maybe they realize that you're uncomfortable with the idea of like being underwater or something like that. It makes it easier for people to learn what you like and dislike, even if we struggle sometimes to read each other's behaviors, because you learn it very directly. You don't learn it through like osmosis or through assumption, you get the actual answers to the questions of why did you freeze up when we were playing that day? Like, was it something I said or did? Was I standing too close to you? Stuff like that. That gives people the opportunity to actually learn each other and understand each other. And that makes gameplay so much better, genuinely. When you can get into a mode when you're both like basically about the point where you can predict each other's sentences and you're in a scene, that can be really fun and very engaging, but you cannot get to that point easily without that structure sometimes.
I will say, I do think there it is probably important to point out that there is a difference between the group you've been playing with for literal decades and the people you are playing with for the first time. I do session zero with my longstanding group, but we don't necessarily have active safety tools in the game because we've been playing together for 20 years. The games we play, we're all kind of on the same page with. That can't be said for when I go to a convention or if I'm starting with a brand new group for the first time and I don't necessarily know everyone as well. So it's, you know, that can be an aspect of this as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I do like this. Sometimes I feel like we get into these ideas that our players are kind of like characters in a story. And so I like this, you know, we're talking about being empathetic to them and treating them first as people and then as players, first as like friends before you treat them as characters. And this kind of gets into our next question too. What would you both say to people who feel like safety tools get in the way of that immersion or that role play? This is kind of like the story, it's supposed to be this way. And if we take all this time for safety tools and we can't get to what really matters, you know? We've kind of touched on this, but I'd like to hear both of your opinions.
I don't know if mine's too mean.
Be mean.
So like, I totally get that to a degree. That's why I do recommend, you know, especially once you're comfortable with safety tools, learning how to use ones that are immersive and integrated into your game. That's awesome. But one, I think we all need to get a little bit more comfortable with the idea of like just not being immersed fully in the game in that way, because that's a lot of the ways we step over people and hurt people. But also, too bad a little, like it's too bad that that like ruins it for you. Maybe you need a little bit more resilience to your narrative being disrupted. But also, like, if you're not actually giving care to other players, if you're not actually considering other people's wants, needs, including your own, in regards to how this could be the best experience you could possibly have, if you're ignoring all of those possibilities because you won't pause for a second and take a little blip of time to realign your goals or whatever you're doing, are you actually having the best time you could have playing? And why are you wasting your time doing that?
Yeah.
If you could have a better time by just being like, well, we're not going to fly through space. We're going to fly through, you know, a nebula that's exploding or something. And that's more exciting. That's fine. But like, it's not as cool to like not do the best possible story, like the best possible experience that's serving everyone in a way that is not harmful, because every harm you cause is a net negative to your narrative.
My point on this, immersion is an illusion. I actually wrote an article on Gnome Stew about this a while back. Immersion happens in moments. By not allowing your players to have a way to tell you what they want out of the game, even in the middle of the game, is like, that doesn't happen. We are not fully immersed in our characters in a game for the full 4 hours we're sitting at a table.
Right.
I actually had an absolutely amazing moment in a campaign I'm running a few weeks back where a lot of stuff happened in games. One character did a pretty egregious thing. All the world was changing around these characters. And we had a moment where they were back at their base. And for 45 minutes, I just sat there and watched them role play, because they had this all this stuff going on in their world. And the players could just sit in their characters and talk with each other about all of this, with all of the emotional drama that it brings with it. That was 45 minutes. That was an extended amount of time of immersion. That, you know, was absolutely amazing, but it was like, that's one part of the whole of the way we all bring ourselves to the table and engage with the mechanics and the game and the narrative. And anyone saying that, like, if you're not in character 100% of the time, is actually deluding themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's not how we play games. It is okay to think above the table when you're choosing what your character is going to do. And there's nothing, I mean, this is a little off topic, but there's nothing more annoying to me than the player who goes, well, that's what my character would do. Because I don't care if that's what your character would do. It's a jerk move. Stop it. The rest of the table's not going to have fun when you do that.
Yes.
You know, so immersion is an illusion. It's great to have those moments where you are full on feeling everything your character is feeling, but no one can maintain that for a full game session. We have to engage with the other aspects of the game as well.
Right. Like, if you only want to play games in which your character only does what they would be expected to do, play an FPS.
Yeah.
I love playing Wolfenstein because I know what BJ Blazkowicz is going to do every single time, and it's going to be to chainsaw some sort of Nazi. You know, so I am fine with that. And that's the game I want to play when I play that kind of game. But tabletop RPGs are, even in solo games, to a degree, collaborative with the designer, with the player, with the experience of our collaborative play. And so we're not like writing books here.
Yeah.
These are not pre-written stories with step-by-step exact moments and scenes most of the time. There are some games that do deviate from that, but for the majority, they're not. So what's the point of playing them if you can't actually like change the narrative a little bit or do something a little bit different or disrupt it a little? Like, where is the like punk nature of disrupting the narrative? I fail to see it whenever we say we can't do that in game.
And it's more than just disrupting the narrative because something has happened that a player doesn't want to engage with or player doesn't, you know, like is wants to pivot away from. It's also disrupting the narrative because a player came up with something really cool that you didn't think of. If you can't adjust for the player who needs you to pivot away from a topic that they find uncomfortable and they don't want to engage with, then how are you going to pivot when a player throws an idea at you that is absolutely amazing and you didn't think of and will make the game even better? Yeah. You need to be able to do both of these.
Exactly.
That's such a core GMing skill, is just flexibility and adaptability.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think a lot of people that get into GMing because they're like, I have a story I want to tell. And that's great. But understanding that that story is collaborative, that you're working with players, working with the design of the game, as Beau was saying, and that you do need to be able to, like, at a moment's notice, just flip. There are so many games I've planned out, and at a moment's notice, I've been like, wow, that's a way cooler than what I had written down on this sheet. We're going the other side of the continent now. Let's go, guys.
Yeah.
This happens so frequently with kids because they are so creative and so wonderful, and their minds are just always thinking of these different realities they can go to. Where, like, you do have to be able already to pivot and run the other direction.
Yep.
Yeah, like, one of my favorite examples of, like, you can change a lot with just the approach you take to a thing is like, whenever I was playtesting Turn, for example, it was, Turn is a shapeshifter's very derivative of Apocalypse World, has a kind of reverses some of the mechanics and stuff game, and it comes with a very different approach than Apocalypse World. It's not a bombastic, like, big fight, like, explosions game. It is a social, community-based learning your identity game. And I had sent it to Jason Morningstar to play test it because he had offered, and I was extremely excited about this. And I got it back and he was like, we just like, it was like insane. And we did all this stuff. And I was like, you literally played my game wrong. And like, that's okay. Cause now I know that can be done. But he was like, yeah, we approached it like it was Apocalypse World. And that was actually a mistake because like, while we still had a really good time, it meant that I was like basically breaking your game to play it. And I was like, that's fine. Cause now I know that it can happen. And like, we did still have, you know, a good time played by the people. It just wasn't really my game that they played. And that's what I mean about like collaborating with the designer as well, because like Jason played it rightfully. Like it looked like it was designed and like, you know, he had the expectations coming into it. Whenever he encountered the fact that the game wasn't actually meant to do that, it changed his understanding of like what my actual design was. He could have like kept playing it and tried to switch back to playing like my game is designed, but he'd already like told the story that he wanted to tell with it.
You know, you getting that feedback means that you can adjust for that. And I think that's a lot of what safety's about is like you hand the feedback to the person who is either making the world go or in this case, making the game go. And then you're like, oh, wow, let me say something about that when I go back.
And if you're a designer and you see a whole bunch of people playing your game and they're playing it in a way that causes a result you don't want as a designer, that's how we end up with second versions of games and stuff like that. And like people sending out errata and being like, actually, no, because like Jason played that before I released Turn. So I was able to update the language I used whenever I released the game. And we didn't really have that issue with the eventual play afterward in any of the other play tests.
Mm-hmm.
it wouldn't have been a safe game to play if people had played it like that, and they were trying to get the result of what turn was supposed to be. If I had pitched it as this, you know, identity-seeking, community-based game where you, like, have all these emotional conversations and get in touch with yourself through animal-like experiences and stuff, then they actually got, like, where his went, where, like, people were, like, doing drugs and getting hunted by the cops and stuff. Like, I was like, maybe that would not, like, work for the people who wanted the squishy game, right?
Yeah.
It's a way of, like, making things safe by learning how to communicate what you want, which is, it goes the whole way back to the prep and the debriefing. Like, you kind of need that whole circular thing to avoid this, like, well, you can't be overly immersed and, you know, you're playing all by yourself kind of problem, because you actually need the feedback and input from everyone involved. And that's how we play.
That was so thoughtful.
That was really thoughtful.
Yeah, I think that the reality is like, immersion is definitely a myth, as Inch says.
Yeah.
But the biggest issue is not that we're worried about whether we're immersed or not. It's that we're forgetting the core aspects of tabletop play, which should, in fact, be collaboration, creativity, and communication through a medium of play. That is what we should be focusing on. And you can do those things without safety, but it sucks. It just sucks.
Yeah.
I played without safety tools for a really long time. And I still occasionally will play without them, but I have even used them for board games because there are some board games I won't play without stuff like that these days, because I think it makes it a better experience.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think I need to play Monopoly with safety tools after this discussion.
I think Monopoly needs those built in. Yeah.
No, that's valid.
That's not a joke, actually. Like, I'm being so real right now. I get so stressed during Monopoly.
Monopoly is the game you play with people you don't like.
How would you pivot when safety comes up in a game, when there's a concern, like if you're in the middle of it, you know, we're talking about immersion. If you're in it and then a safety concern comes up, what's some good ways to kind of pivot into that, addressing that?
I think if you can, if it's something you can swap, like mm-hmm. do a quick mm-hmm. swap, that's probably the easiest way to do it. I was running a bubble gumshoe game and the kids found an abandoned car and they popped the trunk and inside I had a little bit of a jump scare moment. It was an animatronic clown and one of the players at the table cannot do clowns. Immediately. Okay. Nope. It's not a clown. It's a badger.
Mm-hmm.
It's an animatronic animal, you know, like it's just immediately pivot. I have a sci-fi game I've run different times where it's a derelict colony ship just floating in space, and there's obviously something dangerous on it. And in one game, it was like spider-like creatures. The next time I ran it, I had a player that was extremely arachnophobic. Suddenly, they're now egg-laying dog things. You know, it's like you pivot to just something different that, you know, is going to avoid whatever it is that player is going to have a problem with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's a little deeper than that and it's not as easy to pivot, but you should still be able to make those adjustments on the fly to keep the game moving. But respect that player's fun. Respect that player's enjoyment of the game.
I 100% agree with that. I do think that random lists are really useful for this.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you make them yourself, if you like have like a couple of things you're theorizing might be able to be used in a spooky scene or in a really intense moment, or a narrative that you can be flexible on, write them down, put a little number beside each of them, roll a d6 if somebody doesn't like it. And I think the biggest thing is, especially if you're trying to like correct something that may be triggering or like genuinely upsetting a player, just ask. Say, what would make this scary but not bad for you?
Yeah.
Ask them those questions, like directly ask them how it would help. And yeah, it may be a little bit of a step back, but you can sometimes use like things in games. Like if you're playing like D&D or something, you'd be like, there's a haze suddenly and you're seeing multiple different things. What's the thing that really interests you, but makes you afraid or makes you really deep with anticipation to encounter it? You know, ask your players what to do with it. Let them give input. They are engaged and they will be more engaged if they get to give themselves the things they're afraid of or the things they want to be challenged by sometimes. And that way, you know for sure that they're going to consent to it and be comfortable with moving forward. Like asking is like the biggest tool that people underrate all the time in those situations. And even if it's just a quick pause to do it, I generally do not find that those actually disrupt the game, especially if you give it a little bit of like fun to the narrative. Like we've seen, I know that everyone refers to Brendan Lee Mulligan, but I've seen him do this on like the background episode stuff where they talk about where they were playing and they're like, we got partially through the game and there's this part and everybody was just kind of like not really engaging. So I described this whole thing and backed it up a little bit and just went a different route. And while I was describing it, I was vamping basically to think of the cool thing to put on the table. And it worked really well because we just did something that was more aligned to everybody's preferences. He explains it a lot more cool than I do. But nonetheless, that is the gist of it, is like be willing, like to be flexible, like Ange said, and to swap things out, but also be willing to give yourself time because rushing might not be as good as you think. And so like if you like breathe a little bit while you do it and you can vamp, you can, you know, even tell the players, like give them something to work with to start that's interesting, like a mist that arises or there's like a sudden flash of light. And while you're dazed, what do you think? Let them talk a bit and take the time to like gather your creativity and spit out something new and fun.
There's also nothing wrong ever with basically calling for a 5-minute break.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, if you hit that moment where like, okay, I need to pivot and I have no idea what to do, 5-minute break, bio break, go grab a snack, whatever. And take that moment to basically figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah. Pausing is always a really good option to have, frankly. One other thing that I do include is script change that I don't know if there's a lot of other tools like it because it's a little weird, is the frame by frame tool.
Yeah.
Where if somebody says they might be uncomfortable with a scene, you basically just like slow it down.
Yeah.
And you check in every so often. You just, that is what you plan to do. You say, you know, every couple minutes, I will even set a timer if I have to. We'll do a check-in, but let's take it like literally moment by moment of this very difficult thing that we're going through and just breathe through it. Then you often do, I recommend like pausing a lot of the time, either before or after doing something like that to have a break, make sure everyone's okay and that the scene went okay with them. Because this can be used for like very intense content at times and it can be very valuable to have that just like recovery moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean you can't do the thing. Sometimes people do want to do the scary thing or the challenging thing. But they just need somebody to like walk with them through it.
Yeah.
And not just be like, well, you get through it or we're done, I guess.
Yeah.
Because that can just shut you down so bad.
I generally avoid horror games because I don't enjoy hopeless horror or anything like that. But I will play any game of Bridget Jeffries that I can get into because she does such amazing horror games. And one of the things she will put down as she starts the game is she's like, your character is going to die. That is going to happen in this session, but we're going to tell a beautiful story as we go. You know, and it's like it sets up what's going forward, that she is going to engage with you on the level you are willing to engage with your character, but you understand where this game is going from the outset.
If you have something like that, then set the expectation early. I can think of so many. There's actually a specifically a second edition module that I was rereading. Like, oh, this was just, I played through this. It was a cool module, but in it, your characters all die, and now they're brought back as undead, and that's the whole thing. Is that you have to be a bunch of undead fighting to undo this big thing that happened. Sorry to spoil a 30-year-old module for anybody.
How dare you, Jesse or Doc?
Tragic.
I think I knew it going into it, but there were other players at the table that were like, wait, we died? Like, we all died? and like, oh yeah, like, it would have been kind of, like, I felt better knowing that I was going to die. I think that that's something where, if that's something that's part of it, or, you know, if this is a game about losing things, like, you're going to lose things, you know?
You mentioned that like knowing about it beforehand made it funner for you kind of compared to the other players.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a huge anti spoiler culture thing where I hate that people are like, oh, we can't ever tell anybody anything that's going to happen. We can't give any spoilers. It's going to ruin it. If somebody knows the twist, it's going to ruin the entire experience. I have read entire movie synopses and gone in and still been shocked whenever I watched it on the screen. You know, like, it doesn't matter how much detail you give someone sometimes, as long as you present it well, you engage them well, and you make it fun, it's not going to matter if they've read it 1,000 times before.
Yeah.
And that is one of the best ways to avoid people, like, not knowing what they might encounter, even in advance of the actual experience.
I'm just going to mirror that real quick because I've always hated the concept of, well, I shouldn't say hate, but the concept of spoilers has been something that has been weird to me because I've always studied storytelling and like how that works. And like, I feel like I predict things so often, but my wife and I will sit and like guess what's going to happen in most Marvel movies. And we're usually right. Like most, we just don't get like twists don't really surprise us in those because I know comic books real well and we both knew stories and it is kind of a, when people are just like, you know, oh, I don't want any spoilers. Like, well, sometimes it's nice to know if something's terrifying or deemed potentially harmful, it's nice to know that that could happen.
Yeah, I don't want movies necessarily spoiled for me, but I generally want to know what I'm going to go see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I want to know the tone of what I'm going to see, the gist of what I'm going to see. I remember a story from when The Force Awakens opened and there were people waiting to go into the theaters. People were coming out and one guy basically shouted a major character death that happens at the end of that movie. And that guy, the police were called because he kind of got jumped.
I can see that happening. Yeah.
It's yeah. like, don't be a dick about spoilers, but at the same time, there are plenty of people out there who feel more comfortable going into something, having an idea of what they're going to be doing. And with games, don't do a bait and switch, especially with people you don't know.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like, don't do a con game where it's like you said in your blurb that it's one thing and then the players sit down to the table and half an hour into the game, you suddenly pull the rug out from under them and are doing something completely different. That's not cool. You know, that's not cool.
That kind of stuff is really risky to do, too, because if somebody does get very upset, it could be really, really risky for everyone involved, frankly, because that could be really stressful. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the spoilers don't have to be, like, necessary. Everybody has to see them. Everybody has to read them. But they should sometimes be available. And general genre notes and content notes are fair and reasonable and should be available to everyone in the games that you're playing.
Yeah.
You need to know if somebody's going to be comfortable with the level of escalation or intensity that you're going to do so you don't end up ruining the game for everyone when somebody bails out because they're too stressed out and upset.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens.
Random interjection, game designers, game writers, please don't hide important story details because you're afraid of players learning them. Yeah. I was running a game where there was this mysterious figure and I had no idea what the mysterious figure was because the game designers buried what that character was at the end of a bonus adventure at the end of the adventure.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I'm just like, I have no idea. I have no idea what's going on with this character. Jeez. Don't. It's like, it's have not a little respect for your GMs and your players.
Yeah. If GM's running your adventures, give them the spoilers up front.
The GM is maybe the one person who should really know.
I don't want to call anybody specific out, but if it just so happens that you work on things that are called adventure and maybe path, and there's a lot of them, maybe just spoil the events of the last one in the first one. It's okay. It's okay.
This helps us out.
I've been burned.
Yes. My best example of like why like spoilers can be beneficial is there's a movie called Colossal and it has Anne Hathaway in it. And I love Anne Hathaway. Mm. And it was pitched in everything I saw as this woman can become a kaiju, basically was the gist. It looked like it was supposed to be funny and irreverent, like Zach Braffy to a degree. And I was like, I love Anne Hathaway and I can deal with irreverent. Let's do this. You know, I went to the theater and saw it. It is a movie about domestic abuse and manipulation and has forced alcohol consumption.
Mm.
I got so triggered that I was crying in the bathroom for over half the movie. And I was really, really distressed about it because I wanted so bad to get through the movie. I wanted so bad to watch it because it was good. It was a good movie. And I could not. I kept on going back in and then crying and running out and crying and running out and running out. And I was so mad because if I had just known the content of that movie, I could have gotten through it. I could have covered my eyes during like the forced alcoholism scene. I could have known the tone ahead of time. And it broke my heart because like that's happened to me with so many game experiences where like I've sat down to play and it's just really not what I thought it was going to be based on the description at a con. And I end up feeling like if you could have just told me, I could have come at a different time of day for your game and played in that one and I would have been ready for it. But like, I'm not good for a super emotional game about like childhood abuse at like in 8 a.m. You know?
Yeah.
It was really. I've had stuff like that happen. And it's just, if you prepare people, sometimes you get way more dedication even for harder stuff. You know what I mean? Like, people willingly play stuff like Just a Little Lovin', the LARP that is like about like the AIDS epidemic and everything. Like, which
we've talked about that already on this podcast.
Yeah, it's an amazing game. It has so much cultural value and it's very important. It's not something I would probably ever play, but I had friends who were signing up in droves to play that game in spite of the content. And it's like, maybe it's not that bad to just be like, hey, it might be a little hard to get through because of these reasons, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the core things with safety tools, is being upfront with your players about what is the potential content of the game. Doesn't mean people are going to try and abuse the safety tools and control your game or anything like that. It's going to give them the freedom to engage with something deep, traumatic, dramatic, you know, that they otherwise might not be comfortable getting into.
I'm going to throw this out there. This feels like a part one discussion.
This, I actually was sitting here thinking like, this is part one. Yeah. we need to do more of this because it's a great discussion.
But I think we should move on to peer review. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's jump into peer review. This one will be a little short. For those of you who are just tuning into the show for the first time, this is peer review, where we as nerds talk about nerds who love to talk about nerd things. And today we're talking about a special issue on consent in analog role-playing games from S. Harmon in 2025 that was submitted to the International Journal of Role-Playing. This is kind of special as a peer review for us because it's not actually like, I wouldn't say it's not actually research. It is still research adjacent. It is just more of a summary of some papers that have been previously published, along with like a persuasive piece about consent in RPG games, as we've been talking about all day. What I want to go over are just like the high level points this goes through. And if you ever want to find our articles, see them in the show notes so you can review them yourselves. This is a great one. But this article really touches on the idea of risk and safety, with a key question being asked throughout, which is, can we minimize the risk that we are accruing to ourselves in playing role-playing games by having different safety tools? And so they talk about different safety tools that can do that, getting at this idea that risk is part of the game itself and we'll never get away from it, but we can help with it. And so the idea that we have consent in gaming, that consent is fluid, which, if anyone knows me, I'm a part of the research community, and so informed consent and the Belmont Report is very important to us. But talking about safe tools like X cards and lines and veil that can, you know, establish consent, and that consent can be taken away as well. So something that is okay one day might not be okay the next. They also talk about agency and social dynamics at the table and how that can impact consent throughout gameplay. They talk about the relationship that GMs and players have with each other, supporting each other, and how all those things with your emotional well-being matter through the entire process. This is like informed consent 101, and I love this, this article and this issue, which I can go over at a different time for all of us. And then one of my favorite things I talked about was scaffolding, because I'm also an educator. And so we talk a lot about scaffolding in terms of knowledge, but scaffolding safety tools as creating guides to them and supporting the experience through these tools. And so after reviewing this like editorial, like special issue, I did want to ask our guests today, do you think that we can ever fully eliminate risk in the RPG space? And if so, or if not, why?
I will be very frank. No, we cannot. The risk is always going to exist. We're humans. We make mistakes. We slip up. I was actually around for a lot of the stuff, like in safety tools for the stuff that they're talking about. I actually host PH Lee's article on the Luxton Technique on my website still. And I had spoken to PH Lee a lot about it, because one of the reasons why PH Lee didn't hate script change is because it's partially solved the problem of the issue with the X card, of the like, stop, let's not talk about this thing, because it is inherent in script change that you must at least acknowledge what happened and recognize what went on and talk to each other about how you're going to handle things that get erased in the game or skipped over. Like that's an essential part of the tools that you have to use. And it was very like interesting reading this because I love the concept of scaffolding. Fantastic. But they're right that there's no real guarantee. The scaffolding of safety tools is just a tool. It is not a fix it. It's not a brand new option that solves all the problems. And that's partially because humans are fallible, but it's also partially because there are new risks every day.
Mm-hmm.
We can't anticipate those. And that's one of the reasons why script change is not just a use at the beginning of the game, use at the end of the game. It's all through for all different kinds of scenarios. It can be brought up at any time, even in like downtime and stuff. You are allowed to use the tools if everyone agrees to that. That was like a really big thing for me because I don't like stuff that I can't change my mind on. Because sometimes all it takes is like the wrong person suggesting the idea for me to not feel safe with it anymore. And I found that out at cons, you know, playing with people who I had a whole table of everybody that I really liked and trusted except for that one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be fine until they suggested an idea. And I was like, with you, though, I don't like that. Or maybe it's like, while I'm sitting in a super cold con room, I don't want to do a really super energetic scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that where the scenario has changed. So you can never be fully safe. That's why I always say safer table. Like, I very consistently have tried to say that and ask people to say that in language about the games that I play and that I do stuff with script change with. Because I don't believe in a fully safe environment. I don't believe that's possible. But it's not a bad thing, actually. That is not inherently harmful to not be fully safe all the time. Like, we literally have people who bungee jump. Some people sometimes don't want to be safe, and that's okay. It's their choice to make, but it has to be their choice, period. The consent part is essential, and that means it could be revoked at any time.
You can't make anything 100% safe 100% of the time, and even if you try and even get remotely close to that, you're going to dilute what we enjoy about role-playing games to the point where it's not going to be as worth playing them.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to run a lot more trad games. I tend to run a lot more D&D, and I tend to run with a fair amount of older people who I joke, show me on the doll where the GM in the 80s hurt you. Because they turtle. They don't want to engage with the adventure because they're afraid of the risk of something bad happening to their character. And it's like, I want them to be big damn heroes and engage with the adventure. And it's not quite the same with safety tools when you're getting into the games that are meant to be more emotional, more dramatic. But at the same time, we are all there to engage with those emotions. And even if you go into it 100% thinking you're going to be fine, there's going to be a chance you're not going to be fine. That something is going to happen that you're going to be like, oh, that really hit me hard in, you know, in my feels, in my emotions. And sometimes that's what we're there for.
Yeah.
All very smart things to say, Ange.
You're two very smart guests. I also need to point out, I haven't said this yet. When I started learning about safety, I learned all the first things from the two of you talking about it. So that was actually really exciting for me. It's like, this is kind of like, I learned this topic from Ange and Bo. So
that's pretty cool.
And now so many more people are going to learn this topic from Ange and Bo.
Yeah, that's true. Good.
All right. Let's get into our final question. What's one thing that you wish every player understood about how safety tools impact the GM's role at the TTRPG table?
I have one.
Yeah, I want to hear your thoughts.
Go off, Doc.
I think the one thing, the thing I say, it's my safety mantra is, this is to make this more fun.
Mm-hmm.
If someone pushes back on safety tools, I say, this is to make this more fun. I'm happy to go into details, but being able to push boundaries and knowing how you can help you play games in ways that you wouldn't have expected.
In a broader sense, I want players to understand that the GM is also a player at that table, that the GM's enjoyment of the game is just as important as theirs. And sometimes that's going to require the GM to have tools in place to make sure they know they're going in the right direction for the players they have at the table.
My big thing is really there is no one individual at play who is responsible or accountable for safety. So even if your GM provides safety tools and says, hey, you can use these if you want to, and I'll pay attention to them, that's not where it ends. It is not just their job. Every single person at the table and the designers are all responsible, at least to some degree, for the safety in the end space of the table.
Yep.
Period. So if you see somebody looking like they're uncomfortable, I have stuff in my tools for doing things to make sure other people are safer, like calling a safety tool for them if they're comfortable with that and stuff like that. But you also just need to be conscious of other people and of the GM themselves, because the effort of watching out for everyone's safety is work.
Mm-hmm.
It is actual work that takes a lot of energy and can be very fatiguing for a GM to have to deal with. So if you are not participating, if you are not engaging in that safety culture at the table by not actually caring about other people and not trying to learn how to play in a way that is more respectful of everybody's needs and boundaries, then you're making it harder for the GM to actually give you a good time.
Mm-hmm.
You're making it harder for them to pay attention to the story and focus on performing really cool NPCs because they're too busy trying to make up for the lack of energy at the table of care and concern. It's that community collaboration, communication thing.
Dan, did you just say it's going to get you cut?
No, it's not going to get you cut. It's going to get you uninvited.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was supposed to say, I was like, we're stabbing people now.
No, no.
I mean, it might.
We don't hurt players. We hurt their characters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but like, I think the fact that everyone has to be a part of it is one of the biggest parts that people tend to forget. And it to me, is one of the biggest reasons for GM burnout.
Mm-hmm.
I think that fatigues so many of my friends who GM a lot the most, because they're like, I'm trying so hard to make sure everyone's having a good time, but like this person is struggling a little, but they won't communicate it to me. And these people are just like blowing through and it makes it hard.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things is being willing to be a part of things.
Yeah.
And that includes the efforts made. Fun is better when it's earned, and sometimes earning it is just caring.
And, you know, not being a safe person, it's a good way to get cut.
It's a good way to get cut.
That works especially with the little board in script change.
Yeah.
You're up.
I like that I finished the safety episode about just by threatening to stab people.
Yeah.
So before we go, I actually love for you to both tell your audience, or our audience, everybody's audience, where they can find your stuff. Ange, would you?
You can find me at gnomestew.com. You can also find the Gnomecast and Thacko with Advantage over at polygamero.us.
I'm not like doing the social media a lot anymore, but I do have my website still with all of my old blog archives and script change for free to look at there, which is brebo.com/thoughty. And I also still have an itch page. Some of my stuff is up on various drive-through RPGs and everything, but I mostly use itch, and that's thoughty.itch.io. I will try to respond to people if they reach out to me. It is sometimes a little hard because of my health. Keeping up with emails is hard, but it does not mean I don't care. Yeah. So okay. It's still there though. That's where most of my stuff is. And script change does exist in its final form. So
fantastic resources. Both of you provide such great resources for people to play great games. So I just want to thank you. Thank you for spending time with us on the Forever GMs podcast. If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon for bonus content and behind the scenes goodness. You can also find us on TikTok and Blue Sky, where we're always looking for your ideas on what we should tackle next. Reach out to our socials or email us at forevergms@docpalindrome.com. And remember, Forever GMs never stop leveling up the table.
Bye.
Bye.